The following program deals with military and veteran issues. All comments and opinions expressed on this show are those who made them. They do not reflect the opinions of the Church of Satan or Radio Free Satan. So on with the show.
Official Infernal Legion podcast for the month of March 2021. This is a Sinister Scuttlebutt episode, and I am your host, Warlock Jeff Bowling, the commander of the Infernal Legion. With me, as always, is my lovable furry co-host, Warlock Dwayne Burns, the VSO of the Infernal Legion. Dwayne, how the hell are you, sir?
I'm good. I may sound a little meh today because I didn't get much sleep last night, but I'm here and I'm ready to roll.
Well, I'm sure we'll get you fired up with the first story we covered. And joining us, as he always does, is our lovable producer, Warlock Jeff Ivins, the communications officer for the Infernal Legion. Jeff, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good.
Well, thank you, as always, for putting all this together.
Of course.
Before we jump right into the news, I want to give a quick shout out to all of our fans and followers over on social media. Our Facebook page hit 666 likes today. Hail Satan. Now, if we can only get Twitter and Instagram to follow suit, we'd be in a good position. But we are here, and there's a lot of news going on with the military. As we talked about last month, with a new commander-in-chief comes a lot of changes, and with this one, it's no different. And so the military is thrust once again into the forefront of the news. And we're going to kick things off with a bang by talking about the one story that elicits the most guttural responses from civilians and soldiers alike. We're going to go ahead and talk about, as much as I've said, I want to avoid politics on this show. This guy's not a politician, so he's fair game. Jackpot says hello to the listening audience.
Jack, I would beg to differ with you.
Yeah, that may happen throughout the episode because spring is in the air, as are the smells and temperatures of spring. And quite honestly, I love my dog more than any of you, so I'm going to let him do it. But we're going to jump right into good old Tucker Carlson talking shit about women in the military.
Like I said before we started, I got three words for Tucker Carlson. Fuck Tucker Carlson.
Well, even better than that, you got the short clip from George Carlin about fucked up names of men.
No.
Like Tucker.
I got his collection in the bedroom, so yeah. Yeah, guys with the name of Tucker. Bunch of pussies.
My buddies Vinny, Bruno, and what the fuck kicked the shit out of Tucker.
For those of you not familiar with Tucker Carlson, I suggest you climb out of whatever rock you've been living under. He is the host of, I think, the most popular cable news show right now on Fox News. I don't even know what day this happened. This was, I want to say, about a week ago. He said, quote, "Pregnant women are going to fight our wars. It's a mockery of the U.S. military. While China's military becomes more masculine as it's assembled the world's largest navy, our military needs to become, as Joe Biden says, quote, more feminine, whatever feminine means anymore, since men and women no longer exist." So first and foremost, I don't know why he's quoting Joe Biden in that, because I have not heard President Biden say anything about the military needing to become more feminine. Just going to throw that out there. Secondly, what this is in response to, the reason that he brought this up, was a new Pentagon regulation allowing pregnant pilots to wear maternity flight suits, which seems like a pretty common sense move to me. I don't know about you guys.
Well, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, what pregnant officer is going to be going Mach 2 with one in the oven?
Well, you wear flight suits when you fly a C-130, too.
No, yes, I understand. what I'm saying, though, I got you.
Yeah, I could see a woman flying a COD or a C-2 and landing on an aircraft carrier and going from, 150 miles an hour down to zero. Like, oh, damn, the baby's in the cockpit. My water broke.
Well, that's why we designed this special part inside the flight suit.
Yeah.
And he goes on to say, the bottom line is it's out of control, and the Pentagon's going along with this. This is a mockery of the U.S. military and its core mission, which is winning wars. So I will agree with him on one thing that he said. The core mission of the U.S. military is winning wars. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
That's about the only thing he got right.
Yeah, exactly. I do think it's interesting. To begin to tear this apart, one of the first things that I'll tear apart, besides the quote from President Biden that isn't actually a quote, is he references China's military. He says, while China's military becomes more masculine as it's assembled the world's largest navy, our military needs to become, as Joe Biden says, more feminine. Is he aware that the Chinese have women in their military as well?
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is he not seen like China and North Korea and Egypt and countries of those, you know, have their full female infantry units that are just fucking badass and probably tear them a new asshole?
Yeah, Israel is an excellent example as well. The women are actually draftable and subject to conscription, just like everyone else in the country. So I feel like that's a big fucking hole that he's missing there. In addition to that, he goes off the line. He says, the bottom line is it's out of control and the Pentagon's going along with this. What exactly is out of control? Allowing someone who's pregnant to wear a maternity uniform is standard throughout the military and has been since women served as nurses back in World War II. Now they're just extending that same thing to pilots. And, of course, we already talked about not all women pilots are fighter pilots. Not all pilots are fighter pilots.
Right.
I'm sure I'd pull a pregnant woman off of a fighter pilot aircraft just because of how fast it's going and the damage that could have on the penis.
Well, that's what I wasn't being dumb by my statement. I was trying to show how dumb Tucker probably is. Yeah, we're not going to have a woman going Mach 2. No.
Right. So the Pentagon has responded to this. Well, not just the Pentagon. The Pentagon, several elected officials and around the board and generals have all responded to this. One of the best quotes, in my opinion, as a response to it, comes from a Defense Department chief spokesman who said, quote, what we absolutely won't do is take personnel advice from a talk show host or the Chinese military. That's fantastic. If this spokesman would take a little bit of unsolicited advice from this talk show host, good job. Keep doing that. But yes, it goes on and on. And one of the things that's pointed out, and I can't see by who here. Oh, it's the same Pentagon spokesman. Pointed out that Tucker Carlson doesn't have any military service. He was never in the military. He doesn't have any experience in the military. Certainly doesn't have any experience winning wars. Where is his perspective coming from? And I'm all for free speech and people sharing their opinions, and Tucker Carlson has a huge platform in which to share his own. But, you know, if your opinion fucking sucks, maybe just shut your mouth. Right. What do you guys think, man? Let's talk about this. What do we think? Hey, what do we think about Tucker's comments? What do we think about the response from the military and elected officials? And what do we think about women in the military?
I'm just going to go to responses that I had during my time while I was in. Now, there was always the bitch about having women in combat arms. Well, we don't want to have women up on the line because... And this is just stupid people talking. This is not my opinion. This is just things that I've heard. We don't want women up on the line.
This was the debate. The debate right, that was taking
right,
place.
Right, right. We don't want women on the line and then have their period. And you know how women have PMS, they're going to end up shooting our guys because they're pissed off. We don't want women up on the line having babies on the line. We don't want, you know, things of that nature, idiotic bullshit like that, you know. I could just see Tucker taking off with some bullshit like that.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me given his cultural and I think that was coming from you, Dwayne. Okay.
Apologies. Yeah, it's coming from Dwayne. Maybe it's me.
Right. So, when I was in the Army, I served in an all-male unit because I was a combat arms unit. This was before women were allowed in combat arms. The exception to that was our support company, which had, I believe, three or four females in it. None in any position of authority or leadership at the time. That's the way it was when I was in. That's just what happened. And right around the time I was getting out, shortly after I got out, is when the debate really got big about putting women into combat arms roles in the Army and throughout the services. But, you know, in the Army is what I was concerned about at the time. And a lot of those same arguments were presented that Dwayne made, which to me always seemed a little silly on the surface, considering the role that women have always played in war, going back to the dawn of humanity. I mean, and no, they've never been the majority of any infantry force, for example. But they were there all along, and even when we reached the, I guess you could say, the modern age, and women weren't allowed to serve on front lines, they were still serving as nurses and combat medics and things of that nature.
Yeah.
Right, and especially in the wars that we saw in Iraq and Afghanistan, military police were getting into engagements as much as any combat arms unit, and women are allowed in military police because it's a support role.
Absolutely. Not tooting my own horn, but I drove truck over there, and a lot of times that was more dangerous than, you know, just being a normal grunt, normal infantry. I mean, roadside bombs, this, that, you know, taking incoming fire because you're driving down the road, having to stop every 5 miles for an IED. That shit was dangerous too, but, you know.
There were women in your units. There were women civilian contractors driving the big rigs.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean they were all over the place. And if anything, these latest wars showed us the asymmetrical warfare really is the future. There is no such thing as a front line anymore. We're not involved in trench warfare, so it doesn't matter where you're at. You're not safe from the front, as it were. And the only debate that I gave any credence to was the unit cohesion debate, and not because I thought that women are going to ruin unit cohesion, but there is, and I'm the first one to admit it, there is a culture that is built up in all-male combat arms units, and if you just suddenly throw women into that culture, you're going to have a lot of problems. However, you're going off again. You're static.
Have you seen some of the people in this country? Have you taken a good look at some of these big fat motherfuckers walking around? Big fat motherfuckers.
RadioFreeSatan.com.
All right, apologies. apologies for those technical difficulties, folks, but we are back. As I was saying before we took off, that you know, I served in an all-male combat arms unit before women were allowed in combat arms unit. And I heard all these same debates, which made no sense, because if you look at the history of warfare and women's involvement, plus you look at all the countries around the world, most notably Israel, whose women are right there on the front with the men every single day and have been for decades with no problems. The only debate that I gave any credence to was the idea of unit cohesion, not in the long term, but and the idea that there is a certain culture that gets built up in an all-male unit, and you just throw a woman in there, and there's going to be issues. And I'm not saying that anyone's right, wrong, or indifferent for having those issues, but those issues will get ironed out on their own over time, and that's what we saw. Women got thrown into combat arms units. There was an uptick in complaints. There was an uptick in things of that nature, and after about a year or so, it smoothed itself out. And people figured out where they stood. And women since then have been serving right on the front lines with all of the combat arms guys and doing a fantastic job, as far as I can tell. Heaven forbid, or I guess hell forbid on this show, that a woman gets pregnant, which is a natural thing that happens, and she gets to wear a special uniform so that her, you know, belly doesn't get hurt in the process. I mean, that's such a terrible thing. We're going to lose wars because of that. It's fucking ridiculous. It's absolutely fucking ridiculous.
Well, what do you expect from somebody who doesn't know anything about the military?
And, you know, the thing is one of the things about
and his name is Tucker.
Yep.
Never mind his trust fund upbringing. Jeff, you said you wanted to say a lot about this, so let's hear your point of view, especially from the Navy's point of view, because you guys have pilots and you have things like that going on. Tell me your perspective on all this.
Well, basically, you sit there and, you know, I've always had the perspective of, you know, if a woman can do the job, let her frickin' do it. If she could physically do the job. Now, with the rate that I was... We had females during Desert Storm. We didn't have any females on board, but when we went in the final cruise, we had females on board, and they were pulling their weight more than the guys were. So, you know, I don't know where Tucker comes up with, you know, this, you know, we're going to lose wars because we got females in the military crap from, but. You know, it's the old guard military that has the problem with women in the military. And I think that's where Tucker is falling to, is, oh, well, women in the military and this. Russia has got women in the military also. So I don't know what I did. I just want to grab him by the neck and beat his face in until he can't talk. Because he speaks more shit. He's an entertainer. He's not a news analyst.
I mean, pretty much anybody in mainstream media these days is an entertainer. More.
Oh, yeah, well, actually, I think Fox News should drop the news and just say opinion, Fox opinion.
Well, they report the news that they're told to report is what happens.
Yeah.
And there's always some different point of views.
I get to the idea of being an agent provocateur to make money. That's kind of what Tucker's made his living off of, is being a kind of right-wing agent provocateur. I get it. I understand that. And for the most part, I just generally ignore the guy. But this is the Infernal Legion. We talk about military shit, and he decided to call it the military.
So, and he attacked the military in my book.
Yeah. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. It's ridiculous not only to degrade women serving in the military, but it's taking a step further. It's even more ridiculous to degrade women who happen to get pregnant while they're in the military. Now, there's a lot of I've met a lot of women in my military career. Some of them were shitbags. Some of them were high speed. just like the men. You know,
yep.
The debate is currently raging about PT in the Army right now, because a lot of women have not been able to meet the new standards of the PT test. I think that there's a lot more going on to that than just women not being able to meet the standards, because I remember the first time this got delayed, women weren't even allowed to serve in combat arms, and men were the ones not making the standard on this new PT test. So that is what it is, and that will bear itself out. That's something that Tucker didn't talk about, but it's something that immediately sprung to mind, because I know that someone listening to this is going to have something to say about women in the PT test in the Army. And quite frankly, the Army's never been able to do a good PT test. They've never been able to put one together that actually tests combat readiness. So until they figure that first part of the puzzle out, I don't even want to really comment on the women not being able to meet the standard thing.
Well, they're not even going to even touch the point that there's women out there that are doing and exceeding the male standard.
Oh, certainly, yeah.
And you know, people bitch about that. Oh, we're going to have male suicides and stuff because the females are doing better and they're getting dogged out for it. What the fuck, you know? Grow a pair of balls, you know.
Yeah, we'll have suicides in the military for the same reason we've always had suicides in the military, and that's twofold. One, some people are going through a hard time and they don't know where to reach out for help. And right. Two, leadership fucking sucks. And it's always sucked. And they need to pull their heads out of their ass and actually be leaders.
Exactly.
But I was very happy to see the military respond to Tucker in the most glorious of emasculating ways. And I will echo Kirby when he said, I would hope that in the reaction he's seeing, and hopefully our reaction here today, that he'll realize the mistake he made and express some regret about the manner in which he essentially demeaned the entire U.S. military and how we defend and how we serve this country. I know he won't. I would hope that will get through to him. But, you know, what do you expect from fake men, right?
I don't think Tucker's got us that. that's why he's in journalism like he is.
Oh, can I say it? Can I say it? If I can't say it, well, we'll just cut it out. He's got a set. Old Donald John Trump's right on his chin.
I don't know, Dwayne. Can you say it?
Well, Trump's not president anymore. And you said before, Jeff, while he was the commander in chief, we couldn't make any comments, but now he's a public citizen here.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Actually, I think Tucker does have a set of ovaries.
Man. So, Tucker Carlson's a douchebag. What's new?
And then let's get to the
next story. And this is one I promised you guys from the beginning that once we started covering military news and veterans news, that we would give constant updates about what is going on in the wars we are still fucking fighting. We currently have 2,500 troops deployed to Afghanistan, 2,500 troops deployed to Iraq. None of this is counting special operations troops, which we don't have numbers of. They're estimating anywhere from 1,000 special operations troops in both theaters as well, plus Syria, plus the Horn of Africa, plus I think it was 800 troops in Somalia around Mogadishu. We're still fighting the global war on terrorism. The previous administration had reached an agreement with the Taliban, which would see U.S. troops withdraw from Afghanistan by May. On March 17th, St. Paddy's Day, the new administration, President Biden, said that the U.S. may miss the deadline for withdrawing troops from Afghanistan. President Biden says, this is from NPR, by the way. President Biden says it'll be tough to withdraw the remaining U.S. troops in Afghanistan by May 1st, as was the agreement with the Trump administration. In an interview with ABC's Good Morning America, Biden said that he was in the process now of determining when the forces will leave. The fact is that that was not a very solidly negotiated deal that the president, the former president, worked out. And so we're in consultation with our allies as well as the government. And that decision's going to be, it's in process now. That was a quote from President Biden. Now, I don't know what the deal was that President Trump made with the Taliban. And I believe if we go back to the episode when these negotiations were going on, you'll hear me say that I was not very happy that the U.S. was negotiating with the Taliban in the first place. That said, what I'm even more unhappy about is the fact that coming up on 20 years later, we are still fighting this fucking war in Afghanistan.
Well, they're sending love letters. It was huge.
And what I'm a little confused about is why the president can't just order 2,500 troops home. You can certainly order them over there, no problem. Just a month ago, he bombed Syria with no issues. Why can't you just load them up on a plane and send them home?
No money in that.
That has a little bit to do with it. Plus, you got to also remember the infrastructure that they got set up. They got to learn to take down and.
But we didn't do that in Iraq.
Well, no.
All of our vehicles, all of our buildings, all of
yeah,
our
yeah, because bases. We had an agreement with Iraq. You know, we were negotiating with the Taliban. We're not going to be able. We're not going to want to leave our gear over there.
Well, that's why we have Arif John down in Kuwait, because that shit in Iraq can fall apart any day where they tell us just pack it up, get the fuck out. I mean, we have actual stone structured buildings and bait, you know, just like going down to Fort Jackson or whatever. Yeah. We have a base over there, and you know that's why we have that. And you know, those troops that are in Kuwait are considered the Iraqi theater, and that's where a lot of them are as well. So.
Yeah, I wasn't counting UAE, Iraq, or
oh, I'm UAE, not counting UAE either. I'm counting Arif John.
Right, but the Kuwaiti troops don't count for the numbers that are in Iraq. We have 2,500 in Iraq, plus possibly up to 1,000 special operations troops.
Right.
Same thing with Afghanistan. Same numbers, honestly, with Afghanistan. But yeah, I understand the concern about security risks to the nation that exists right now in Afghanistan. With leaving sensitive stuff behind. But some concertine wire, a few Connex trailers, and a Humvee isn't going to get the Taliban in any better position than they were already. We already know what's going to happen. The moment all of our troops leave Afghanistan, the Taliban's going to take back over. We already know this.
Yeah.
It's a given. I'm obviously not advocating leaving 50 cal machine guns laying around in Afghanistan.
But they will declare a double victory. We beat Russia, now we beat the U.S., now we can beat the world.
Yep.
Right. But they already get to declare that victory, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I am happy that my daughter did not follow my footsteps and join the military, or she'd be fighting a war in a place that, for a reason, that she wasn't even alive to see.
Right.
Which doesn't make any goddamn sense to me. Now, that said, I'm not the president. I assume that the president has access to information that I don't have. So I'm sure he has his reasons. I just would like to think and hope, I guess you could say, that those reasons are above board and honorable.
Right.
But I did my time in Afghanistan, and I know how important those poppy fields are.
Right. Well, it is only March there, Lou, and I mean he's only been in there what? How many weeks? 8 weeks? 12 weeks?
Not even 12. You
know, right. I mean, the cabinet members, the national security, the intel branch that the previous administration had was just shit. And I'm thinking that, you know, maybe he's checking shit out, making sure everything's kosher. Because quite honestly, I don't think even if Mr. Trump was still in there that he'd be leaving by May 1st.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't know about that. You can say a lot about Donald Trump in the negative, and you absolutely can say a lot about him negatively. The one thing you can't really put on him is that he wasn't a warmonger. He was big on pulling. So the reason we have 2,500 is because he pulled the troops down from 12,000. Didn't wait for Congress's approval on that, which he doesn't have to pull troops out. He just did it on his own. There were some military actions that he took that I was a little questionable about. One, I think, two or three of which we covered here on the podcast. But he was not a big war guy. The one thing that I will say about the current president is that when we entered these wars, he was a senator and he voted for both of them.
Right.
And now here we are with the tentative pullout date of May 1st, and we may not make that. Doesn't fill me with confidence, but the commander in chief is the commander in chief, and he will do with he will do as he does. And we will continue to be here for all the vets who are coming out of Afghanistan that weren't alive for 9/11.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen, let's take a quick break and we'll jump back into this stuff.
In 1966, Anton LaVey created the Church of Satan, marking the beginning of the Age of Fire and Year One Anno Satanas. In 1969, he published The Satanic Bible, codifying Satanism as a religion, the first time it's been done in human history.
In the name of Satan, ruler of the earth, king of hell, come forth from the pit, bestow the blessings of hell upon us, for we are your children, and we invoke thee this night.
In 2001, I was appointed High Priest of the Church of Satan. In 2007, I published the Satanic Scriptures, further defining and expanding on Satanic philosophy and greater magic ritual.
Hail Satan, full of might!
Hail Satan, full of might!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Our allegiance is with thee!
Cursed are they!
Cursed are they!
The God adorers!
The God adorers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
And cursed are the worshippers!
The Nazarene eunuch.
For the past 50 years, the Church of Satan has stood as the sole organization to define and defend Satanism as a religion. And though pretenders to the infernal throne have come and gone, we have stood the test of time and will into the future. Visit churchofsatan.com for more information and read the Satanic Bible and the Satanic Scriptures. Knowledge is the solution for ignorance. Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
Hail Satan!
This is Reverend Gene, the host of Vox Satanae, exclusively on Radio Free Satan. Join me every week as we indulge in the classical side of music spanning the past 1,000 years. Vox Satanae has already featured over 700 composers covering medieval, baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary music, including chant, choral, opera, keyboard, and orchestral music, with composers ranging from Gluck to Gilmour, Bach to Bellavance, Talis to Taverner, and Paganini to Perrault. Get your weekly recommended dose of classical music right here on Vox Satanae, only on Radio Free Satan, with me, Reverend Gene. Hail Satan!
I used to flip through one television station after another, disgusted by what was supposed to pass for comedy. Seeing all of those terrible, predictable comedians made me sad, and it made me shake in my seat. I thought it was the early signs of restless leg syndrome combined with clinical depression. so I went to see my doctor. It turned out that I just needed to listen to better comedy. That's when my doctor recommended The Devil's Mischief on Radio Free Satan.
The Devil's Mischief is a one-hour dosage of comedy and novelty that's made for you, not for the masses. After a decade of biased research, The Devil's Mischief has been clinically proven to be effective at inducing laughter and whimsical feelings in many listeners.
I can finally laugh again.
You don't need a prescription to listen to The Devil's Mischief. You don't even need to visit a pharmacy. That's because The Devil's Mischief is not a pill. It's not a syrup. It's not a spray, a cream, or even a suppository. It's a podcast.
All I need is a connection to the internet.
To learn all you need to know to listen to The Devil's Mischief, visit the official website, devilsmischief.com.
Whether you like to listen to podcasts in your web browser, download an episode directly, or subscribe to podcasts with iTunes, The Devil's Mischief can help.
Side effects may include side splitting, gut busting, knee slaps, and slapstick. Some listeners have reported being in stitches, with gags, or finding it to be a riot. Do not listen to The Devil's Mischief while drinking a beverage. Ask your doctor if The Devil's Mischief is right for you.
Or don't. Why should you have to pay that stupid copay for a doctor's visit?
Listen to The Devil's Mischief on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Come with me, Warlock Jeff Ivins, for a time trip back to the 1980s on the Metro. I play synth pop and other hits from the decades of indulgence, only on RadioFreeSatan.com.
Attention iTunes users, if you like this show and other programs from Radio Free Satan, then please take a moment to look us up on iTunes to rate and comment on the program. You can also do the same on Stitcher.com. Look up this program on Stitcher.com, rate it, and give us a review. And that's if you like the show, of course, you know, that you want to give it 5 stars and a good review, not, you know, give it 1 star and say a bunch of mean things. But hey, if you want to do that, then I'm sure there are a bunch of Christian podcasts on iTunes that you could do that on. Anyway, thank you for your support of RadioFreeSatan.com. And now back to the program.
Welcome back to the official Infernal Legion podcast, the Sinister Scuttlebutt edition for March of 2021. We're going to jump right into our next story here. We're going to talk about, and this is from the Military Times, this article is, A Year Into COVID, Veteran Halls Barely Hanging On. Now, for those of you not familiar with what a Veterans Hall is, it's the actual physical locations that groups like the VFW, American Legion, AMVETS,
Purple Heart, Disabled Vets.
A lot of these people have physical locations around the country and around the world in some cases. I know the VFW has a lot of overseas locations. They have physical structures, and those structures are used for everything from post meetings, where the officers of the post will meet up and discuss their business, to craft, like circles, a lot of them have halls where professional wrestling and concerts will take place, and then they also almost always, and there are some exceptions, but almost always they have a canteen attached to them. And the canteen is the bar. It's a place where you can get drinks and food, and you can talk with other vets about your life, your experiences, these things that have happened. Well, when the pandemic hit, bars got shut down, as did anywhere with public gatherings, for the most part across the entire country and even across the world in a lot of cases. We all know what the economic impact of that has been, and we're still seeing the effects of it come in. But of course, these places were hit as well, because a lot of these places, in order to stay open, depend on the canteen and special events that are held in their locations to keep them open. So the money they make from those two methods is what keeps the post itself open, and the post itself is what actually does the work in the community with veterans, and even sometimes with not veterans. My VFW post down the street does a lot of work with recovering drug addicts and homeless people as well. All, of course, with the aim of furthering the, for lack of a better term, veteran agenda. And with those two main sources of income shut down, several of these posts, and according to this article, let me find the number here, almost 45% of posts might not reopen. That is a huge resource for veterans, for their families, and for the communities that these posts are in, to lose. It's a really big deal. It's really terrifying that this is happening, and it's happening across all the different VSOs. It's happening across American Legion, VFW, Vietnam veterans, and vets. All of them are losing their posts around the country. I don't know. This is very for me. I never got heavily involved in these other VSOs. I mean, obviously, I've been doing this thing with the Infernal Legion and trying to get this off the ground. But I do frequently go into the canteen at my local VFW and have a few drinks and talk to other vets. And sometimes I'm having a bad day. And I think, you know, the two of you can, you know, understand this and empathize with me on this. Sometimes I'm just having a bad day. The memories are a bit much. The issues start to kick off. And there's nothing better for that than just to go into a dark bar, light up a smoke, grab a beer, and talk to another vet. And for this resource to be lost across a big portion of the United States is a huge deal. I'm afraid, personally, that it's going to lead to higher rates of suicide. And it's going to lead to higher rates of vets not getting their compensation. Because a lot of times this is the first point of contact with a vet and a VSO who can actually help them through the process, like what you do for the Legion, Dwayne. So it's kind of a scary time for these posts. What do you guys think? Do you visit these posts? Do you see their impact in the community?
I do. I see a lot of homeless vets going in just for a place to sit and stay, either like in Florida here to keep cool during the day, or in Ohio or whatever to keep warm in the winter. They have meals that they see. When you mentioned the canteen was a major thing to keep the post going, I kind of, if you saw me in the camera, I kind of snarked at that, because the canteen, it sustains itself. What makes the money for a post is having weddings there, renting your ballroom out for weddings, having dinners where vets come in, they spend some money, they prepare a meal, people eat, and they make a few bucks on it, and now that homeless vet has a place to go to sleep tonight. You know, things of that nature. That's what keeps those places open, and they're not even allowed to do that shit.
Well, I know. Before I was even a veteran of a foreign war, I did several wrestling shows at VFW halls.
And we
would pay thousands of dollars to rent the hall, and I know that was helping them do their mission for sure.
Right. You know? Well, and that's like renting it out for a wedding or something.
Yeah.
Like, rent the hall out to fucking have a paintball or whatever. I don't give a shit. You got the money and you want to clean it up afterwards, rent it out, you know? it's just, those are the things that keep us sustained.
I know that both you and Jeff are teetotalers, for lack of, you know, a better term. But I also know how many thousands of dollars are spent every week in the canteen at my local VFW. So I think you grossly underestimate how much vets drink.
Yeah.
Oh, no. I don't underestimate that. A lot of money is gotten through special raffles, let's say.
But here's the thing, and this is where I kind of have to differ from Dwayne. I'm on the e-board on an American Legion post. The American Legion does not recognize, per se, the canteen, the lounge, or the social areas. But the majority of the American legions that have not been able to stay open are the ones without the canteens. Luckily enough, the posts that I'm associated with, they had money stored in a money market account.
Right.
That, and we had to dip into it just to stay afloat. But the canteen is what makes that post the money. It pays the bills.
Right. Well, and you also have to think about size of community, too, because a lot of another thing that, that posts get a lot of their money from to sustain themselves is from membership dues.
Yeah.
For members. Now, I'm a member at large, so I've never had to pay a monthly membership due. I just bought that right out of the Army. But I know that, like, the local post that I go to here in the town that I'm currently in, the membership dues are what really keep it going as well. And when you start to remove the services that are available, or when those veterans who are paying monthly dues can't afford those monthly dues anymore, that's another source of income that's cut off. Mm-hmm. So if they can't afford it, or they have no reason to pay it because they can't go in, whether it be the canteen, or whether it be to rent the hall, or whether it be for, you know, a concert, whatever is going on there, it's a bad situation all around. But I mean, these things, and you guys, I mean, tell me how you feel about it. These things are anchors of most of the veteran community, if not the community as a whole, in every community that they're in.
Yeah.
My vets have always had a problem with staying afloat because of the foreign wars. People are going to say, well, fuck, I'm going to go belong to the VFW. I got a Purple Heart. I'm going to go belong to the Purple Heart, or I'm going to go belong to the disabled vets. The American Legion, the only thing qualification you have to have for that is to put in your 8 years.
Not for the Legion.
Your 4x4, your 2x6, whatever. You have to just be honorably discharged.
No, not for the American Legion, it's not.
Are you sure you're not talking about the AMVETS?
Well, the AMVETS you just have to serve. But the American Legion,
I could go to basic training and I could smash my kneecap and they discharge me out of medical. And you know what? I could go to the AMVETS.
Yeah,
anything other than dishonorable is accepted by AMVETS.
Yeah.
Right.
But the American Legion, up until Congress passed the Legion Act, you had to serve at a certain time.
Uh-huh.
But now that the Legion Act has passed, anybody from December 7th, 1941 till today can join.
Right. Okay.
Personally, I'm a member of six of them. So
yeah,
I've got two. I'm a AMVETS and
first officer. Here's one thing that I've seen with the COVID is a lot of your posts are closed to the public. You actually need a key card to get in the place.
Yeah, their membership club,
which is fucking good, in my opinion.
Which is good, and that's, I see a lot of posts getting around the COVID shutdown stipulations because of that. We're a private club. We have people socially distanced because there's only 10 people in the bar, and I can seat 60 people at the bar, you know. Yeah. People are socially distanced, whatever. They're wearing masks.
That depends on what state you're in, what their rules are, things of that nature. Like, I'm not going to dime any post out. But for example, in Arizona, the health inspector has the right to inspect even private clubs.
Mm-hmm.
They can't get around it.
Or whatever,
in
you
a
gotta
place like that.
That.
There are other places that don't have those types of rules, other states that don't have those types of rules, and they can certainly get around it there. But clearly it's a problem. With 45% of these veterans halls are shutting down, it's clearly a problem.
Yes.
Well, there's a VFW that's north of where I'm at. They shut down permanently because they couldn't handle it. They had no money to back up.
You know, another thing that I think greatly affects this is the size of the community they're in.
Mm-hmm.
like, for example, a VFW post in New York City might be doing fine because they have hundreds, if not thousands, of members coming to that post. But if you have a VFW post in a town of maybe 1,000 people,
they're going to get shut down.
Marion, Fredericktown.
Oh, well, no, Marion's like 40,000 right now, so we're good. Wow. We have two VFW halls here.
No, Fredericktown's got about 2,500 people in there, you know.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, no, that's a perfect example. That they might be ones that are actually in danger. On the other hand, as you were referencing, Dwayne, the smaller the community, the easier it might be to get around the regulations, as it were, because nobody's going to tell on you in a smaller community. But yeah, it's a very interesting time, and I know that, as we mentioned in the last article, with us still actively engaged in combat operations overseas, every day there are more and more veterans who qualify for a lot of these VSOs that are looking for someone to talk to, looking for a place to go, and a lot of them are just not going to be able to reopen. And they're not going to have a place to go. And that kind of saddens me, personally.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know. I do know that after I read this article before I shot it over to you guys to discuss it for today, I'm definitely heading to the VFW this weekend to drop a few dollars on some beers and have a good chat with some of the other vets.
Right.
I'm actually not going to the Legion until probably next week. Like on a Monday when I got an e-board meeting.
Now, what is your... So, we talked about this. You got this position with the Legion. Mm-hmm. I totally forgot to mention it. What is it that you're doing for your American Legion post?
Well, we're about ready on to go to elections. Switching from historian down to just a e-board member only. But
and what did you do as a historian? Was it just the history of the post or the history of the Legion as a whole? Like
the history of the post. If there's something, you know, like usually when we have like the department commander come in from the department of Florida, I'm supposed to be there to take pictures and stuff like that.
Did you also do like obituary style announcements and stuff when a member died or something like that?
If I found out about it, yes.
Gotcha.
All right. But next year, I'm just going to be on an e-board.
Anytime he gives a scholarship out at a school or something,
I need to do that.
That's another big thing that these VSOs do. And one day, I hope to get to the position where we can do it as well. But we're still young. We're just starting off. We're not ashamed to admit that we don't have the resources of the VFW or the American Legion. But yeah, a lot of these places do scholarships, not just for veterans, but for the family of veterans, for the kids and grandkids of veterans. Each of these posts pays a national due to the national, I forget the
national, national leadership.
Yeah.
National headquarters.
They pay their dues to stay open as well. And as these posts shut down, that's less money flowing into the national headquarters as well. So, I don't know. It's a tough situation.
Well, the thing about it is, like the American Legion, they raise their dues, and if you try to do the paid up for life feature, which means you pay within a year, pay the dues for the thing. I would have to pay over $1,000 to get the paid up for life.
Yeah, I think mine was $1,600 or something like that.
Yeah. But I can go to the AMVETS and pay $250 for a lifetime membership.
Yeah, I think VFW was about $400 when I paid.
Yeah, something like that. But the Legion has gone up on their prices for a membership.
I think
that reflects though upon well.
Well, they went up. This was a couple years ago. They went up on their pricing.
Right,
and the national went up, and then the state went up, or the department went up, which is the state. You know, they went up a total of $8, and a lot of people are not paying that. They're like, what am I getting out of this for this?
One of the other things I've noticed too is that the I can't speak for all of them, but I know AMVETS, VFW, and American Legion for sure have started to be a little more, I guess you could say, liberal with their membership policies.
Well, like, that's part of the
they'll let vets in.
Yeah.
And they'll let, you know, obviously the immediate family of vets are allowed in. But now they're like some of them will extend it to the grandkids or the great grandkids, and it's like these aren't veterans. Like when I go to the VFW mm-hmm. and I sit down with, I want to talk to some vets.
What it was called at, what it was called at my post was an associate membership.
Right. And now and we in the Infernal Legion, we have a similar thing. We have the auxiliary. Obviously, we don't have like a canteen or anything, but we have the auxiliary for people.
We got a canteen there. Right here.
Yeah, the canteen's in my fridge, bitches. But, you know, obviously, we allow in people who are working closely with us. For, you know, for example, we just congratulated, I think it was a couple months ago, we congratulated High Priest Gilmore and High Priestess Nadramia on auxiliary membership and in the Infernal Legion because of the support that they give us and the ways they've had our backs and supported us since it started. But I'm not letting the grandkid, I'm not letting Dwayne's grandkid into the Infernal Legion unless he serves. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I feel like there has to be a line somewhere, you know what I mean? Family picnics are one thing, but being a full-fledged member just because, you know, you've got 1/8 of the blood of a veteran. <It's kind> of weird. All right, gents, let's move on to that final story of this month's podcast. And this is a weird one. This comes from military.com. This is National Guard troops ambushed in Texas, held at gunpoint while transporting COVID-19 vaccine. Now, I'm going to get into this. I'm going to read the story to you, but I have to admit, when I first saw that headline, I thought for sure this was some crazy conspiracy theorist, anti-vaxxer, trying to, you know, show off the guard. It turns out that's not what it was. It was just a crazy dude.
conspiracy theorist.
It does highlight some issues with the military involvement in the vaccine distribution that I want to talk to. So let's talk
and
about
the rule and the rules of engagement.
Yeah, that too. So this happened on March 23rd. It was an armed Arizona man ambushed 11 National Guard troops transporting COVID-19 vaccines in Texas and held them at gunpoint Monday after an extensive chase on a highway. So the National Guard troops were in three vans. Most of the people listening to this and us, I'm sure, have all been in those wonderful military passenger vans, the type of vans that they had.
Passenger van shit. And when I was in, we still had the Jeeps from Korean War.
Yeah, but every battalion has a passenger van.
I'm trying to be funny.
So these troops were loaded up in these vans, and they were transporting vaccines along the highway to wherever their in location was. This man, 66-year-old Larry Harris, tried multiple times to run these vans off the road in his vehicle. Finally got them to stop, jumped out, and using a 1911-45... held the 11 guard troops hostage until police showed up on scene and arrested them. By the way, he was also claiming that he was an undercover police officer while he was doing this, and was accusing troops of kidnapping and transporting illegal immigrants.
Sounds like a QAnon.
And on.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, the Texas Highway Patrol, or whatever they're called, and the local police responded very quickly and got this guy into custody. No one was hurt. But here's the issues that it raises for me. The 11 soldiers who were transporting these vaccines were unarmed. They were not wearing any type of protective gear. They were just wearing their BDUs. And they were transporting these vaccines. Now, I know that our membership and our listening audience is going to be a little torn on the whole vaccine thing and the COVID-19 pandemic and all that. I understand all that. But the point is, if you are going to enlist the military to transport this vaccine, which you've already declared as part of a national emergency, why aren't these National Guard troops armed and ready to defend the product?
That's why I said ROE. You mean we had troops in a military vehicle without web gear on and a Kevlar?
Well, they don't have to wear a Kevlar. But yes.
Anytime we went anywhere, we had to have a fucking Kevlar on.
I bet you they all had their Dayglow pizza belts on, though.
They probably did. Hey, I got something in the trunk of my car if you want one.
God damn.
So maybe I'm being a little too authoritarian about this, but I feel like if you're going to tell the military to transport this thing that is supposed to resolve a national emergency, they should be armed while carrying it. And it's the National Guard. It's not like it's active duty troops on U.S. soil. It's the National Guard. That's what they do. So, I mean, am I wrong?
No, you're not.
No.
That vaccine's a biohazardous chemical. Even though it's for something good, it's still biohazardous. I mean, anytime in the transportation corps, you're out there transporting something for the military, be it, you know, ET spaceship or fucking MREs. You got weapons, you've got everything because you got to protect what you're driving or protect what you're hauling.
Dwayne, you weren't supposed to tell anyone about ET spaceship.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of national security.
But no, I agree wholeheartedly. I also, and this is going to be my own little diss on the National Guard here. Now, mind you, I served 2 years in the National Guard. Dwayne, you did several years in the National Guard as well.
Space Force.
The fact that one guy with one pistol held 11 troops hostage until cops arrived. Where were the cojones on these troops?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was thinking as well.
Oh, wait a minute. I know what it is. They were females transporting the virus.
They were all wearing maternity flight
suits. Yes, maternity flight suits.
There's your next story, Tucker, you fuck. This is why we shouldn't have females in there. They didn't get the COVID vaccine through.
I'm sorry. If a woman is on her time of the month, she's got that PMS going on. I don't care. A guy with a 1911A1 is not going to stop her.
Nope. He'd fire the bullet, she'd yell, and it would shatter.
Yep.
I think the Texas National Guard needs to reanalyze their qualifications there, because if two airmen in Europe can take down a bomb-strapped terrorist on a train, 11 National Guardsmen in Texas should be able to take out one 66-year-old guy with a 1911.
Yeah.
But it's a very weird situation. It also calls into question, you know, we talked a little bit about the vehicles and whatnot. Why the fuck are you transporting this shit in essentially a civilian passenger van?
Right.
You know, instead of in a convoy. I mean, it's important stuff. There's a whole lot missing in the story is what I'm trying to say, people.
Have one vehicle and QRF with you at least, or something.
Right? Yeah, something. Or have a police escort. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's technically.
If this 66-year-old, if this 66-year-old man thought that this was a convoy of illegal immigrants, it makes me wonder if the weapon was even loaded.
Oh, it was.
It was. It was loaded. Yeah.
I think that's pretty the reasoning behind that too. Like, oh, I'm gonna stop this essentially military convoy because they're transporting illegals over the border is a little fucked up to begin with.
Yeah.
Come on, we gotta think of something quick.
But you know, this also brings into question numerous things of this nature where this has happened before. Most recently, and it's happened before that, but one most recent example is guard troops being deployed to the border because of what was declared a national emergency, and yet they weren't given weapons and they weren't armed. What the fuck is the point of putting the military in any type of national security situation if they're not going to be able to use force in this situation? I'm not saying they should have, or that the guard even should have been deployed to the border in the first place, but if we're going to do that, why aren't we giving them the tools that they need to achieve the mission? I don't know. It's a weird situation.
It is. The National Guard falls under the state governor, and Governor Abbott, he loves his guns. I don't think he would have had a problem arming those troops.
Right, it's Texas.
Yeah.
You think they would have had their M4, their M9, maybe a 50 cal on top on the roof?
Yeah. Come on.
Mark 19 out the back door.
But all right, so Mr. Harris, the 66-year-old with the 1911, was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, unlawful restraint, 11 counts of unlawful restraint, unlawful carrying of a weapon, and impersonating a public servant. And also interference with Texas military forces, which is a very interesting crime to have in the books. He is in custody in Lubbock County Detention Center. He's also pending a psychiatric evaluation before he goes to trial for all this. So we'll see how this...
I think he really needs it.
Yeah.
Just like you, Al.
They better be glad I'm not... Go ahead.
I was going to say, maybe we can get Tucker Carlson a referral to whatever psychiatrist. All right, gentlemen, any final thoughts on this story or any of the stories we've covered tonight?
Nope.
I was going to say something stupid, but I'm going to keep it to myself.
Why start now?
Fuck you.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for joining me on this, and thank you, everyone, listening to the podcast. And thank you to all of our social media fans for those 666 likes. Hold on. Dwayne, what do you got?
What do I got? Just real quick, I wanted to... My grandfather on my mother's side, his birthday will be on the 26th. He would have been 100 years old. He's a World War II Navy vet, I believe. He was a first class or a chief petty officer. But his high holiday will be the 26th, and I just wanted to mention that.
Very cool.
Yep.
Once again, thank you to our listening audience. Thank you to you gentlemen for being here with me and for discussing this. And we will see you guys next month. Until next time.
Veteran Suicide Hotline. Phone number is 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-TALK. And as soon as you dial that, you press number 1. Also, you can text to 838-255 for more information, but it is just as effective as chat. Support is free, confidential, and available 24/7. It is available to all servicemen and women active and inactive, guard or reserve, and available to veterans, family members as well.